The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, this is Kevin McCullough. Thanks for listening to the Christian Outlook podcast, where we cover today's issues from a perspective that honors your Christian faith. Our podcast is brought to you through a partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. Here's another piece I trust you'll enjoy.
Well, young people are leaving the church in record numbers. We know that, but what do we do about it? Well, best-selling authors and worldview experts Sean McDowell, Ph.D., and Warner Wallace, they know that parents, youth leaders, Christian educators can help the next generation embrace a biblical worldview. So the next generation will know preparing young Christians for a challenging world is a practical guide using research-based and proven strategies to help us understand the younger generation and provides the tools to help equip them with the truth of Christianity. So the next generation will know covers how to recognize the uniqueness of Generation Z. I know you're wondering, which one is that? Connect with the hearts of young people, relate and share what we know about Jesus, provide kids a worldview that is significant, and prepare students through movies, music, social media, and current events. Every chapter of the book, So the Next Generation Will Know, features information that speaks directly to various adults in a child's life. Interviews with pastors, apologists, teachers, cultural experts, and examples of people and ministries that are effectively teaching truth to the next generation. Say, my guests, the next generation of Christians faces spiritual, emotional, intellectual, and moral challenges like no prior group of believers. Time is short, the challenges are pressing, and the need is great. Now more than ever, we must embrace strategies that will help young people set their hope in God, remember the works of God, and keep the commands of God, so that the next generation will know. Well, Dr. Sean McDowell is a best-selling author, co-author or editor of more than 18 books, including Is God Just a Human Invention? And Evidence That Demands a Verdict, with his father, Josh McDowell. He's also an associate professor of apologetics at Talbot School of Theology, Biola University, and blogs regularly. Sean speaks internationally on a variety of topics related to culture, students, and apologetics. He joins us today to talk about the book that he co-authored, So the Next Generation Will Know, Preparing Young Christians for a Challenging World. Sean McDowell, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Georgine.
You know, when we think about the challenges that the younger generations are facing, we sort of wring our hands because we too face the challenge of how to connect with them in ways that are meaningful and will help move them in the right direction. Can you help give us some perspective on the challenge that both the older generation and the younger generation face when we're talking about being faithful followers of Christ?
Yeah, I think that's a great way you framed it, that there's older generations, whether it's millennials, Xers, boomers, and up, looking at this new generation thinking, I don't even know where to begin, how to connect to them. And then there's young people looking at the old generation thinking they're out of touch. They don't have a clue what's going on. And the first point that I want to make that's very important for both sides to realize is across the generations, whatever generation we're talking about, Georgine, is we have much more in common than we do differences. Our common humanity helps us transcend these cultural differences. And we have to remember that because sometimes we focus on the differences that are actually there. So for adults, it really just begins by saying, all right, what's unique about this generation? How do they think? How do they see the world? And am I willing to step outside of my comfort zone, reprioritize values in my life, and begin to reach out to this generation, which, as you kind of hinted at, has more challenges just one click away on their smartphones than any generation has ever faced before?
Yeah. And I think the challenge is to do that without having a scowl on our faces.
I am so glad to hear you say that, because when I speak on Gen Z, I'll often ask audiences, and these are adult audiences, give me words to describe this generation. And people say things like confused, arrogant, disconnected, all these kind of negative terms. And then I stop and I pause. I say, let me ask you a question. Were the words positive or negative you used to describe this generation? And there's like this pause. I wish I had a video of it where light turns on. People think, oh, my goodness. And I make the point. I say how we view this generation will shape how we relate to them.
Yeah, or don't relate.
Exactly. So every generation, there's positive and negative. We have to choose to see through the positive. And if we do, we can connect with this generation.
Yeah. I think about the scripture that says that God is faithful to all generations. He's not puzzled by it. This isn't something that he's challenged with trying to come up with some way to penetrate their hearts. He's faithful to every generation. So if we seek him and we seek to understand this generation, that connection can be made. Now, why do you think Gen Z is the least religious generation? And what are some of the factors that play into that lack of faith?
Well, one of the things with Gen Z that's hard to know is, are they truly less religious, or is this generation defining themselves differently and the definition of religion playing a less central role? And I actually think it's towards the latter. If you go towards the 1960s, only 60% of incoming freshmen did not define themselves as belonging to a particular religion. Today, it's over 30-some percent. So we're tempted to say, oh, my goodness, they're so less religious. And I think, you know what? I think how we define ourselves and what this generation bases their identity in, religion is no longer at the top of their list. It's not taken for granted. But I think when we go back over previous decades, it's not like this generation was necessarily more religious. I actually think they just didn't define themselves that way. So we're kind of seeing the middle hollow out, so to speak. So there still really are a lot in Bible-believing teaching churches. A number of young people, a significant minority, that do see themselves religiously. But my concern is not so much our identification, but how the secular worldview has been more significantly into a lot of areas of this generation.
Well, let's talk about the outsized influence that the modern media has in shaping the worldview of young people. We tend to think that the rest of us have very little influence, that modern media essentially is the primary shaper of worldview. Is that true? And should we be intimidated by that if it is true?
Georgine, every study I've seen shows that the primary shaper of the worldview of young people is parents. Primary. And a lot of times, because parents are not engaged in relationships, they're not training their kids up in the ways of the Lord. And by default, the media and the other kind of elements in culture shape their worldview. So parents are number one. But with that said, yes, the kind of different forms of media, in particular social media, has a huge influence on this generation. And it's kind of in two ways. One is the message itself that comes through. But second, the medium of social media, the way people communicate, is also affecting this generation. I think the structure of their brains, their relationships, and certainly their worldview.
What are some of the common questions about Christianity in particular that you are asked by non-believers in this generation?
You know what's interesting about this generation is you actually start to see a lot of the same questions from believers and non-believers about the faith. There's not a huge difference in the questions. And here's some of the top ones. One of them is kind of the intersection of science and faith. Do I have to give up science to be a Christian? Can I believe in evolution? Kind of that kind of conversation is significant. Second, questions like, how is Jesus the only way? That feels exclusive to a generation that has been told inclusiveness is the highest value. Mm-hmm. And there's also questions of, the damage or so-called damage Christians have done. I mean, not only the Inquisition and Crusades, but we've heard about a lot of abuse within the church even today. And last, I'd say LGBTQ questions of identity and sexuality are really central to this generation. I get asked that all the time.
And do you find that most people from, or the majority of people from the older generations are unprepared to address those questions, don't quite know how to answer some of the more challenging, sexuality, for example, or that they just shy away from discussing them?
Well, to be completely honest with you, I don't think most people in the church have really thought through and developed a consistent biblical worldview that addresses the tougher issues of our day. And that makes our task harder. because how can we raise up a generation with more challenges ethically if we don't really know what we believe first? So I think the reason people are reluctant to have conversations with this generation is because they really don't know what they believe themselves first.
Yeah, and I think that's such an important point that we shy away because we're unprepared. And I think your book, So the Next Generation Will Know, challenges us to recognize we must be prepared, or else just write off the generation that I think has an openness to respond to the gospel when presented in a way that they can understand, speaking a language that they speak in the context of the culture that we all live in.
I think that's right. And I'm glad to hear you say that, because part of being human is we're made in the image of God, and we yearn for meaning. We yearn for purpose. We want to know truth. Deep in our hearts, we're only satisfied if we know God and we have real community. But the problem is that this generation just has so many distractions around them that they never have to stop and really feel the loneliness in their heart. They can just distract themselves. But I found in the right relationship and a lot of the strategies we employ in the book, this generation is willing and eager to have those kind of significant spiritual conversations.
And we should be encouraged by that. Rather than feeling hopeless, we should be encouraged, and that there's a role that generations that have gone before, those of us who are older, can play in helping them arrive at that relationship. Well, let's talk about the book and how it can help those of us who have a genuine concern about and a love for young people and want to help those who are followers to prepare to live out their faith in a challenging world. Let's talk about how the book helps instruct us so that we might minister to those younger.
Yeah, the book really uniquely is not a kind of a what book in the sense of here's what you need to believe or here's what you need to understand. Although mm-hmm. we have a little bit in there, the book is really what we call a how-to practical guide to put this into practice. So we explain a few things like here's what a worldview is, here's what's unique about Generation Z, here's how they think. But really, we just want this to be like a manual that a parent, a youth pastor, a mentor, a Christian school teacher, really any caring adult who looks at the next generation and says, gosh, I want to help them own their faith, can just take this and come up with some practical strategies to help them really own their faith.
So this is after you've graduated from seminary and you've had an internship in a church for a couple of years, and so that you are theologically prepared and confident that you can address every potential situation that might come up. This is really for regular folks, for parents who are concerned, for youth leaders who are concerned, for pastors, for regular folks who are walking along the way and want to bring young people along with them.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You don't have to be a pro at all of this. Now, we certainly give a list of resources and encourage people to go deeper in their understanding of theology and culture and apologetics. But one of the studies that we came across that really surprised me is the largest study I have ever seen on faith transmission, 3,500 people, four generations, 35 years, by a USC professor, Vern Bengston. They were looking sociologically at faith transmission from one next generation to the next. And do you know what the most significant statistical factor was? It was a, quote, warm relationship with the father. Now, that's powerful. That doesn't mean the mom's not important, because the father tends to be more of a wild card than the mom. But it shows that anybody can reach out, build relationships, and that truth is best experienced and passed through relationships. We can all do this if we're willing to just step out and do it.
In fact, each one of your chapters challenges the reader to make love their motivation. Your chapters, for example, do you love me? Love responds. Love understands. Love relates. So that the motivation isn't dominance. It isn't anything other than a genuine regard for young people and how we can pass along to them what we have learned along the way of following Jesus.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I really began the story with a simple story that was memorable to me. Well, maybe 3 years ago, I was sitting there with my then 3-year-old son at a local coffee shop, and a fellow maybe a decade older than I am in his 50s leaned over and he said, you know, good for you for spending this time with your son. I said, well, thanks. Why do you say this? He goes, you know, my kids are grown up and they're gone, and I sacrificed a ton of money. He said, I'm a real estate agent, and it cost me, I don't even remember if he said tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars. He said, I wouldn't trade it for anything. That time is sacred and special with my kids. Do it. And it really hit me. I thought, gosh, we sacrifice for what we love. We sacrifice for what is important to us. Well, what's more important than the next generation? Everybody listening to this show right now had some adult sacrifice to pour into their life so they could be successful and come to know the Lord. Every single one of us have. The question is, will we sacrifice our priorities and really reach into this generation? Because I think they are responsive and open to an adult who reaches out to them in that way. So we frame the book in terms of love. It's about loving this generation is the way to approach them.
Yeah. One of your chapters is titled Love Equips, giving kids a worldview that brings significance. I think you could ask any kid anywhere and they would agree that that's really what they want at their core. They want to live a life of significance, but don't necessarily know how to get there. Give us some ideas of how we can help them to shape a worldview that competes, quite frankly, with the prevailing worldview of the culture.
Here's one simple idea I did recently with my son. He's 15, and when this movie Bohemian Rhapsody came out, which was about the rock band Queen, he asked me if he could go see it. I read up a little on it and thought, well, I've got a little bit of concerns about some of the message of sexuality. I think there's at least a mild agenda in this film. But I looked at it and thought, you know what? He's old enough to talk about this. So I said to him, I said, hey, here's the deal. I'll take you to the movie. You can bring a friend whose parents approve. If when we're done, we just come back home and you talk with me about it for 20 or 30 minutes. He agreed. We went to the movie, brought his friend. We came home and just sat at our dinner table and for probably half an hour just talked about what was the message of that movie? What was positive in the movie? How as Christians should we think about this film? What did the movie say about hope? And we just talked it through. I didn't lecture him, but in a relationship, exploring ideas helped him think Christianly. So our whole goal in this, Georgine, is not to say here's a whole new plan and all these things people have to do. Rather, we're just encouraging people to say, if you open up your eyes and look around with intentionality, there's more opportunities to influence this generation than you think if you just see it and prioritize it.
That's such an excellent point. In fact, one of your chapters, our listeners will be interested in knowing, titled Love Engages, preparing students through movies, music, social media, and current events. These are things they connect with on a regular basis. It's easy to complain about them, but it's another thing to seize these as opportunities to have conversation that can be influential in the life of a young person.
That is exactly right. Opportunity is the key word. Every time I see an article that I'm reading in the news, I think, huh, maybe I could talk with my kids about this. When I hear about a TV show, I think, I wonder if this is one we could watch and discuss. I am always in the back of my mind thinking, what are opportunities to teach kids in the classroom, to talk with my son and his friends, or to talk with my own kids? The opportunities are there.
Another of your chapters is titled Love Trains. And the subtitle is Resisting the Desire to Entertain Rather than Train. I think sometimes we reduce our interactions with young people to entertainment because we feel like, well, at least they're more likely to like me if our conversation devolves to that. Talk a bit about this notion of training a young person through the course of just natural life conversation and walking together.
Well, we're trying to create a shift in the way some people look at the next generation from teaching to training. So teaching is when we just impart information to somebody. But training is when we prepare somebody for an upcoming challenge that they're going to engage in. So for us, we're not suggesting everybody go out and do this tomorrow, but we take students onto Berkeley's campus, we take students to Salt Lake City, and we get them in conversations with atheists and with Mormons and people of very different belief systems. So when we're teaching on that theology and apologetics, they have an actual event they're looking forward to. So this isn't just information. This is stuff they need to know because they're about to be in the arena, so to speak. So I think we need to look at parenting. We need to look at just any mentoring this generation saying, all right, how do we get kids into the game? How do we challenge them? So we're not just giving them information.
Yeah.
But we are actually training them, and it starts to change the way that they value the information and theology that we're talking about.
Well, this is an excellent book to help older adults to think through the opportunities that we already have to be men and women of influence and to be motivated by love rather than a sense of frustration with the younger generation. Again, the title of the book is So the Next Generation Will Know, Preparing Young Christians for a Challenging World. The book is published by David C. Cook. Sean McDowell, thank you so much for the book and for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me on, George.
Appreciate it very much.
Thanks for listening to Christian Outlook. Our program is coming to you today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you enjoy our podcast, take a moment and tell a friend to subscribe today.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.